Hello, everyone, and welcome to Qualitative Conversations, a podcast series hosted by the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group of the American Educational Research Association. I'm Jessica Lester, the current chair of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group, and I'm happy to be joined today by Dr. Callie Guyatt. Dr. Guyatt will be speaking with me today about her engagement with visual arts and visual methodologies. Kelly is an assistant professor of qualitative research in the Department of Educational Studies and Psychology, Research, Methods, and Counseling at the University of Alabama. Since 2015, she's also served as the co-coordinator of the Qualitative Research Certificate Program. This program is one that serves students from across the University of Alabama by immersing them in the program, a program of study that's intended to deepen their knowledge and practice of qualitative inquiry. Kelly is a graduate of the University of Georgia and completed her doctoral degree with a focus in art and art education, while also earning the Interdisciplinary Qualitative Research Certificate. Prior to this, she worked in Georgia public schools as a high school visual arts teacher. Her experiences in the arts has uniquely informed and inspired her research and teaching practices. Her current work thinks with post-structural and post-human theories and explores questions related to methodology, equity, nomadic philosophy, visual activism, and pedagogy. Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Kelly, just to get us started, in your work, you really powerfully engage with visual arts and visual methodologies. Can you speak broadly to this in sharing how you take up the visual in your qualitative work?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned in your introduction, my background is in art education. So actually all three of my degrees are in art education. And prior to returning to higher education to work on my doctoral degree, I worked as a high school visual arts teacher. And so this background in the visual arts has and really continues to inspire my methodological work in subtle and really overt ways. Mm-hmm. And so I always find that it manifests in different ways depending on the particular project that I'm working on. So this can range from using visual data to drawing from artful philosophies to using art making as a practice of inquiry, as part of my inquiry process. And so I'll give a couple of examples of some ways that the visual has kind of infiltrated my qualitative research work. So it started off in my dissertation where I became very interested in a tool called visual journals. Mm-hmm. And these journals are essentially places where students can reflect through visual and through verbal modalities. It's a pedagogical tool used in the classroom. And so I was co-teaching a what we called a transdisciplinary design course with a colleague from the College of Engineering, and we had asked our students to keep these visual journals. And I just became kind of enamored with the types of things that were happening in those spaces. Mm-hmm. And our prompts inspired them to think about. And so it led to some just really fascinating insights into what was happening in the classroom. And so even while I used other data sources like observation, we used focus groups, we had documents, we had all of these things that were happening within the space of the classroom, but the visual journals, and then we also had the students that create art exhibits. Mm-hmm. For some projects that we were doing in the class. And I was thinking, like, there's no way I can dismiss the visual, what's happening visually in this space. And so right away, I began to realize that I just couldn't let myself use one modality, one data source to analyze it and to understand what was happening in that classroom. So I really, at that point, started to think about the stories that were being told, both visually and verbally, in the classroom. And so that's kind of where it started. It started with this, you know, kind of a pedagogical tool that turned into data that I just couldn't let go of, because it wasn't that the verbal stories weren't compelling. And it wasn't that, you know, I could just focus on the visual, but for me, the both of them speaking together was just telling this kind of multi-layered, complex narrative of what was happening in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And so I turned to visual methodologies as well as narrative inquiry to really help me kind of make sense of my dissertation work. Mm-hmm. And then more recently, I have took on a project that was driven completely by kind of personal affect of the post 2016 United States presidential election, mm-hmm. in which I was kind of walking on my campus at the University of Alabama every day going to my office, and I was noticing these chalkings, these chalk messages that students were creating on campus. And I was having these very visceral responses. I mean, you can imagine, and you may have had these things happen on your campus as well, Jessica, mm-hmm. with regard to messages that were denigrating certain populations, mm-hmm. and that were offensive. And so I kept seeing them. I kept getting madder. And then eventually I was like, you know, I have to do something with this. I'm kind of fascinated now by how this is plugging into national rhetoric and even local mm-hmm. rhetoric that is problematic, and we need to be thinking about this because it's here. And the thing about the chalkings at my campus is that they lingered for months mm. because we were in a drought. And so I began to think about, you know, the environment playing into this. I began to think about human agents, human actants, and the fact that we could very easily erase these things with water, but still they lingered. Mm. And so for me, the visual culture part became really interesting. And so I turned to this notion that I had read about of visual activism, this process of documenting or representing social issues visually with the goal of sparking responsive action. And so initially my interpretation of visual activism was that, you know, these were things that were meant to inspire equity and social justice. Mm-hmm. And then I really quickly began to realize that, well, that's my, those are my political views. Those are my political beliefs. Those are things that I think about when I think about activism, but activism doesn't always have to mean something positive. Mm. And so I looked at these chalkings and was really interested in how they were speaking to a very different group, a different population, and these different messages that were happening. So for that particular project, I drew from Rosie Braidotti's notion of nomadism, mm-hmm. and her work on critical posthumanism to really explore how these chalkings were reflecting certain ideologies, how they were plugging into local and national discourses, and to really think about also, because it was my kind of bodily reaction that sparked this interest, to think about how bodies and affective responses came to matter through these chalkings and kind of what they did to all the bodies and even to the ideologies involved. And then I've also done some work through arts-based research. So taking arts-based research approaches and using visual art, visual expression to think through, to inquire through these visual modalities. And that's kind of taken different forms, but mm-hmm. I find as a former visual arts educator and sometimes artist that it allows me to think differently about my research inquiries, and it affords something so unique, and it also, I think, it helps me decenter the linguistic, you know, the writing that becomes so prominent, that everything we think and we do has to be conveyed through writing without really realizing the limitations of writing. There's only so much that we can say through language, through written language, and that visual language affords us something very different. And I think that that's so something that we discredit, and it's something that we kind of don't take the time to really think about, but the process of creating, I think, is so important. And so the visual sometimes comes into my work in ways that don't always become public. So whether, you know, like I was saying, through visual data, or other visual means, sometimes it's just a matter of me needing that visual space in order to think differently about the research that I'm doing. So as a whole, I think it really depends on what's informing that particular project, how I'm conceptualizing that particular project, as to how the visual comes into it. But I feel like it's something that's always going to be there. You know, the visual arts is just such an important part of my background and of my life. And so I always love to find ways for it to kind of permeate into my work.
These are really powerful examples, Kelly. The Qualitative Research Special Interest Group was established in 1987 to provide a space within the American Educational Research Association for the discussion of philosophical, ethical, and methodological issues in qualitative research. We invite you to consider joining the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group today. For members of the American Educational Research Association, the annual fee for joining the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group for regular, non-graduate student members is $10, and the annual fee for graduate students is $5. As members of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group, you will gain access to a network of fellow qualitative scholars, as well as our many activities, ranging from mentoring opportunities to our exciting new podcast series, to updates and news related to recent qualitative publications and jobs. Please visit the American Educational Research Association's website at www.aera.net to join the Qualitative Research SIG today. You know, I just realized that perhaps some of our listeners are not familiar with what it even means to be a visual arts teacher. Can you talk a little bit about that? What is a visual arts teacher?
Absolutely. Well, so I worked in high school. I was a high school visual arts teacher outside of Atlanta for 5 years. And so in my experiences there, I was fortunate to work at a very big school. And so that may seem strange to say, but what was fortunate about it is the fact that I worked with, we actually had a visual arts department. We had, there were four of us that taught visual arts classes ranging from, we had our introductory courses to drawing and painting, to sculpture, ceramics. We taught, I taught a jewelry and metalworks class. We had a crafts design course. And I also taught AP art history. So I got to look at that side of the arts too. And so it's just this, visual arts education is, you know, it's oftentimes considered a, you know, quote unquote special or elective in K through 12 classrooms. But I always wanted my students to think about it as a space where learning was happening, in a space that was important and valued and should be valuable to them as a integrated part of their education and not as something separate. And so that was kind of my philosophy, and I just had the wonderful opportunity to work with such talented and such thoughtful high school artists, and it was, you know, obviously something that continues to inspire my methodological work.
You know, when you first started, you said something similar to in your dissertation work, that you could not dismiss the visual. I think that's a really powerful idea. And I think the examples that you offered have really nicely illustrated the ways in which the visual is engaged for you within your qualitative work. I wonder though if you could speak a little bit more about how you see visual arts engaging with qualitative methodologies, qualitative inquiry, and vice versa, how qualitative methodologies can engage with the visual arts.
That's a great question. I think it's helpful to contextualize just a little bit of how I came to see that engagement, that possibility for engagement. Mm. And that started, so I remember back to my very first qualitative research course that I took as a doctoral student. It was my first semester. I took the course with a fantastic scholar and qualitative researcher, Judith Priestley. She asked us to call her Jude. And she was so open, so honest, so fantastic. But I just remember being in that class and feeling completely lost. It was so jarring for me at the beginning. It felt like a new language. I was trying to make sense of kind of the connection between theory and methodology. Mm-hmm. And I think like most graduate students and most doctoral students, it was this idea that everyone's getting this but me. Mm-hmm. And then slowly over time, I think what helped the most was realizing that qualitative inquiry wasn't so different from artistic inquiry, mm. what we do as artists, artistic practice. And so I came over time to realize that there's such a nice connection between these two things for me that helped me to kind of, I don't want to say reconcile, but it helped me to kind of see the visual arts and qualitative methodologies of qualitative inquiry more in a more related and interrelated way mm-hmm. than I have previously. And so first of all, I think about the notion of creativity. And so I use one of Joseph Maxwell's texts in my intro class, and I was just rereading it this past week as we had our first class meeting, and I noticed it. There was a sentence where he says that qualitative research design is a do-it-yourself rather than an off-the-shelf approach. Hmm. And I think that kind of started to get me. That captured my attention when I was starting to engage with qual work. Is that there's this idea for many novice scholars that there's a way to do research hmm. and that there's some magical book out there that's going to tell you how to do qualitative research. And once I kind of got over the initial fear and paralysis that came with that, realizing that's not the case, I became really excited about the fact that it is do-it-yourself, that mm-hmm. it requires an immense amount of creativity to be able to conceptualize how all these moving parts can come together to do research. How you have to think about your research questions and be mindful of the philosophical work that's inspiring and influencing your work and the theories that you're using and the process and being able to invoke a type of creativity in doing research that I felt I so valued in my artistic work. I feel like that connection was kind of the first thing that got me over my bit of fear that I had with qual. Other ways I see them engaging is through the ability to attend to complexity and layers. So in visual work, we can do that quite literally. In literally creating layers to our work. But I also think that we don't have to reconcile. We don't have to make everything clean and clear and obvious when we're creating visual work. Mm. That it's okay to play with complexity and to ask more questions. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's very similar in qual. You know, we're always asking more questions. I think for every question we ask, we're asking 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 more questions. And, you know, that idea that, you know, is this work ever going to be finished? And I feel like that completeness is very much mirrored in visual work, mm-hmm. where, you know, at some point the artist has to kind of step away and say, okay, well, this is enough. And the same thing happens with our inquiry work, is there's always things to think about and always things to consider. And at some point we just kind of have to step away, realizing that it isn't ever going to be finished, but what lingers with us will help inform our future work. You know, it continues on beyond the existence of that one article, that one painting, that one sculpture, that one book that we engage with.
So Kelly, you've mentioned a few times this notion of layers and the idea of literally engaging with layers, but also in a non-literal way. Can you talk a little bit more about this engagement with layers and even pursuing layers in our work?
Well, that's a great question. I think that for me, the presence of layers signals possibility. Mm. It moves us away from linearity, from hierarchy, from binaries, and it allows us to attend to things, you know, as I was mentioning, the complexity of things, but it also, I think, allows us to move back and forth between kind of local and global, parts and whole, and to play it in the in-between spaces, mm-hmm. That I think are so productive in inquiry work. So for me, the layers, they signal possibility. And they also, there's an open-endedness, and a resistance to closure that I think is really, really productive. That, you know, so often we feel this need to kind of tie everything up into a neat little bow. But I think there's something to be said for thinking about the messiness and immersing ourselves in the messiness of social work, and social justice work. Mm-hmm. Because that's inherently, I mean, that's the world we live in. It's multi-layered, it's multifaceted, it's complex. And if we can attend to those things through our inquiry processes, then I feel like that mirrors so nicely with really the complexity of our social world.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's a really powerful idea to sit with. Mm-hmm. Kelly, I know that many of our listeners may be unfamiliar with this idea of engaging with the visual arts and qualitative work. So what might be some useful starting points or practices for them to think about? What would you recommend?
When I first started thinking about visual methodologies, I read some of the kind of familiar faces, you know, so when you kind of go out and you Google visual methodologies or you go and do a library search, there are some names that pop up. And so I started with those folks. So people like Marcus Banks, Sarah Pink, Jillian Rose, John Prosser, and Claudia Mitchell. All of those scholars and their work, their books and their articles gave me a nice foundation for starting to understand visual methodologies are and how they can be taken up in qualitative inquiry. And then at the same time, being, you know, coming from a school of art and being already familiar with arts-based research, I was reading arts-based scholars, and that was a helpful, those were helpful readings to do because it gave me a different perspective. So these weren't necessarily people that were grounded in, you know, ethnography or sociology, but these are, in many cases, were practicing artists who were doing inquiry, arts inquiry. And so it was Tom Barone and Elliot Eisner. I still love their book on arts-based research. Graham Sullivan, Patricia Levy has some great books that have been very helpful. And then in terms of education, being within a college of education and doing educational research, I found Richard Sigismund and Misha Kahneman-Taylor's edited book to see those examples of arts-based research, especially the ones that take up the visual, to be really powerful and really helpful. And then even turning to the artographers, Stephanie Springay and Rita Irwin, among others, to kind of see how they were situating artful research within different philosophical traditions. Mm. And then I turned to narrative inquiry. And there was Hedy Bock was the name that kind of came up as someone who was doing visual narrative inquiry. Mm-hmm. So those were the people that I kind of initially turned to, and I'm so happy to see that since doing my dissertation work, that there's so much more out there. So there are more books, there are more journal articles, there are special issues of journals, and entire journals devoted to visual work. And it's just been really nice to see that become so much more prevalent. So I think scholars in 2018 may find so many more resources than I initially found. And I've seen a lot of new journals that have come out that are publishing some really great work. So I think in terms of a starting point for scholars interested in visual work, I would encourage them to go out and seek journals that are visual friendly. And as I mentioned, there are entire journals, like there's the Journal of Visual Anthropology, there's a Journal of Visual Culture, there's Visual Inquiry, there's Visual Arts Research. There are all these journals now that in every issue, you're going to see a lot of work dedicated to visual methodologies. And then going back to kind of those foundational scholars is very helpful as well. So check within your discipline. And then don't just limit yourself to your discipline either. Move beyond that and allow yourself to be inspired by lots of different types of visual work. So my process is to once I find a book or find an article that I really love, is to look at who else they've cited. And then create a kind of follow-up list of, okay, I need to go out and I need to read this person and read this article and read this. And it helps me to have these little rabbit trails that I just continue to follow. And that's been a super helpful way for me to familiarize myself with visual methodological work.
Such great suggestions. I also know that another place that people could turn is to your own work. So Kelly, if people are interested in learning more about your work, how might they access it?
Sure. Well, I just recently created my website. So I've been putting some information on there about my teaching and my research and publications. So they're welcome to visit that. It's KW Guyott. So it's guyott.people.ua.edu.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Kelly, for joining me today. It's been a pleasure to learn from you.
Thank you. It's been fun.